everybody. Welcome to Inside Situation, a bi-weekly podcast where we share with you some of the conversations we're having inside the agency. I'm Peter Yudusik, head of technology at Situation, and I've got two incredible guests in our Situation studios today. The first is Jeremy Strom. Hello, Jeremy.
Hey, Peter.
And we've also got Adam Sedwick. Hello, Adam.
Hi, Peter.
And Adam and Jeremy are two of our amazing web developers here at Situation. Truly two of the most interesting, fun to work with, and smartest guys I've worked with in a long time. They are, the guys who actually build the things that we think up and get them out into the world. And over the years, we've, grown in complexity and the kinds of stuff that we've been putting out into the world, not just, brochureware websites, but we're doing a lot more sophisticated stuff. We're integrating with APIs. We're creating websites that have to be bulletproof against national events like the Super Bowl, working with some great properties like One World Observatory, where they have to sell so many tickets all day, every day, all year. And just really the sophistication of the product that's come from our dev team has really grown. And it's largely in part thanks to these guys. So we're thrilled to be able to just have a conversation with them, find out why they do what they do, why they keep doing what they do, and what they like about working here. So Adam and Jeremy, again, you guys are both in town this week. You both currently work remotely.
Yep.
And when we get the chance to have you in the office, we're thrilled, not only just to get that FaceTime and have those conversations, but, it's just really our opportunity to take you guys out to dinner and say thank you for everything that you guys do. So let's start by just talking a little bit. Jeremy, you've been working with us for about a year, right?
Yeah, just over a year in some capacity or another. First as on a contract basis, and then I came on full time in May of this year. So, yeah, it's been a while.
We were so excited once we started working with you on projects. You actually worked with one of our designers previous to working here at the agency, right?
Right. We both worked at the same firm in Austin for a couple of years. So, yeah. So we've known each other for a while. And you kind of develop a shorthand and way of communicating that is, really helpful going into new projects and stuff like that. So
yeah, I think nepotism from when you work with great people is one of the best ways to grow your team, especially if you mentioned that shorthand. It really takes time to build that up and build up that trust. And, between a designer and a developer, building, sometimes you're going to see something in a comp that you need to have that comfort level to say to them, what the hell were you thinking? Yeah, or like, yeah, let's just really get into this and find out how we can meet in the middle to try and execute this. So the more we have a direct connection between our strategists and our devs and our designers, I think the better our product is. And Adam, you've been working with us for a little bit less than a year. You started back in January, right?
Yeah. I joined Situation back in January, worked the opposite of how Jeremy joined our team. I came on full time and have now recently moved out to Chicago and I'm working remote with you guys.
Tell me a little bit, if you would, why you chose to become a web developer. Why do you love what you do? Why do you find it interesting? Why have you decided that you want to do that working with an agency, which I know can sometimes have pros and cons, but why do you like what you do and why do you get up in the morning?
Yeah, so ever since I was a kid, I've been interested in, programming and stuff like that. My first computer was an Apple IIe.
Nice.
And even at that time when I was just a kid, my interest led me towards just making cool things happen on the screen. I didn't, a lot of the stuff, I go to the library and get code books and they'd be, 20 pages of code that I would manually type in and, save to a big floppy. The stuff that I really liked was where, you make fireworks pop on the screen or, in 8-bit or whatever it was. And yeah, so it was always a very visual thing for me. So I think that kind of naturally led into, I still like to make cool things happen on a screen. That's basically what we do. I do backend stuff too, and I enjoy solving those logical problems, but that's all towards, just having a front-end experience. So
yeah, and I mean, for me, I'm gonna talk about our age gap here a little bit.
You're the youngin.
I am the youngin. I am also probably the only person in this room who doesn't remember a time where I didn't have a computer. Granted, I was born in 1990 in a time when computers weren't still super common in
pre-internet,
like, in every house. Definitely pre-internet.
Okay, well, that makes me feel a little better.
But my father worked for Sun Microsystems before they got bought out by Oracle. So I've never not had a computer. One of the privileges of having a father who works for one of the biggest computer companies at the time. So my childhood was MS Paint and floppy disk games like Lemmings and Fire and Ice. I remember having to load up the computer, stick the floppy disk in, and wait for maybe a 5 kilobyte disk to load, and it would take minutes at a time. And now we're building websites that are megs, and people complain if they take seconds to load.
Well, that's really interesting perspective you bring to it, and mentioning that you've never not had a computer in your life. I think one of the things we're starting to see with some of our visitors to the things that we build are people that have never had a computer and have only come on mobile. So we're about to pass another threshold where there have been people that never had that experience of sticking a disk into a drive or even optical media. So I think we're about to pass another. You didn't make me feel too bad about being too old, because I think we're all about to get trumped by people that have only ever had a mobile device with a touchscreen, which is a whole other kettle of fish.
Yeah, I mean, there's a whole generation going into college now where the first computer they're ever going to buy is their laptop that they need to buy for school. And even then, I don't know if that's going to be around in a couple of years. Microsoft's got the Surface Book and Apple's got the iPad Pro. Laptops may not be around in 3 years.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a whole change in the dynamic of how things are built. I mean, when I started building stuff, it was probably just at the decline of GeoCities. So people are still building sites that are using weird flash animations, and nobody thought you could use a phone for anything other than making a phone call. And now, more often than not, I spend more time on my phone checking emails and browsing the web than I do on a desktop, just because I have a computer more powerful than the ones we used to go to the moon in my pocket.
Jeremy, you alluded to this a little bit. You guys, can you, because I think some of our listeners may not know the difference. I think some of the people we work with may not know the difference. But can you describe and take a minute to talk about the difference between what's considered a front-end developer and a back-end developer? And I think in the last 10 years, things are merging and the lines, I think, are getting a little bit more blurry. But can you just describe, I think it's fair to say you guys would both describe yourselves primarily as front-end developers with, you know, back-end skills. Is that accurate? And can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so front-end being the, you know, the visual side of what you're seeing, the page structure, the styling, the visual elements, sort of the front-end, you know, JavaScript interactions and things like that, where backend is the logic behind everything that's powering, you know, it's maybe delivering the content from a content management system or a database, for the front end to display. That's...
Sometimes I describe a backend developer as kind of the plumber of the web world, whereas a designer might design the look of your house, but the people keeping the infrastructure and the electrical and the plumbing working is a whole different, you know, set of skills that you don't necessarily see.
Yeah. And, you know, people talk about full stack developers a lot too, people that kind of do everything, but it seems like that the scope of that term has become so vast that nobody can truly claim to be a full stack developer unless they're, you know, genius level, like truly genius level, and put, you know, just learned everything about everything. And I don't know if that person exists, frankly.
Yeah, I mean, in the last probably 3 to 5 years now, with the massive takeoff of JavaScript MVC frameworks, even the front end back end terms have begun to get a lot more gray, actually. I would say you've got people who now identify simply as JavaScript developer, and a couple years ago, before things like Angular existed, a JavaScript developer was primarily writing JavaScript or jQuery to do things simply in the front end of a site. And now you could have a JavaScript developer who builds an entire site, front end and back end, because of these things, where now we've got Node, which lets JavaScript run on the server to do back end functions. So, I mean, front end and back end are getting more blurred and blurred every day. I think the way I like to look at it is client side and server side. I feel like it's a little easier to differentiate. Client side, anything that happens in your browser is client side work. Anything that happens between the server and your computer is server side. So typically, a back-end person is doing server-side work and a front-end person is doing client-side work. Again, in the last couple of years, that started to get a little blurred. But I think Jeremy is definitely more comfortable doing both client-side and server-side. I would say I'm comfortable doing server-side, but I do like to focus more on client-side and the different interactions we can do in the client. But as Jeremy knows, I like to complain a lot. And I do like to dabble in application architecture. So,
well, I'll just, you know, I think one of the things that I really enjoy working with you guys so much on is that you have that curiosity to understand the full arena of what's going on. Mm-hmm. It's very easy to silo yourself into a specialty, but I think in general, the people that are successful in this agency don't, you know, just kind of wall themselves off and say, this is what I do and I don't do anything else. We may not know what the answer is, but kind of the willingness to get your hands dirty and say, you know, that's not supposed to behave like that. Let me see if I can try to figure out what it is. And, you know, I think we also, just to mention some other roles that typically play a piece in this, we've got systems administrators, we've got server administrators, we've got database specialists. So, you know, it's really about assembling the team and I that's going to come to the table to build the best product. And I think one of the things that I really appreciate about you guys is when you know, you come to the table and say that, you know, we're really going to need to look for this component to have this project be successful. You know, cause nothing's worse than sitting there and feeling like you have to do something that is not in your comfort zone. But I also wanted to talk, you know, I think Adam, you alluded to it, the number of tools available now to you know, used to be, if you wanted to do something special that nobody had done before, make two things talk to one another, you needed a back-end dev to figure out that connection. I think now there are so many tools that aggregate APIs and connect things together and make it so much more intuitive that a front-end or a JavaScript developer can really do more than they ever could before, because there are more connections being made between services and tools. Do you guys find that to be true?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that's hot right now is the idea of building a bunch of microservices and then having them talk to each other, as opposed to building, I think they're called obelisk services, where you're essentially just building one giant site and that one site or service does everything. A lot of people are really hot into microservices right now. So you build a bunch of little things that do one thing really well, and then you just have them talk to each other. And another one of the things that's made the development community kind of explode in relatively recent years is the huge acceptance and opening of open source projects and sites like GitHub, where GitHub didn't exist 10 years ago, where, like, so if you wanted to share something, you had to write a blog post about it, or post it on your website if you updated your website, which nobody has time to do. Where it's like now on GitHub, you can just put stuff out there for people to use, and anyone can use it, anyone can grab it, and it's people are sharing and helping each other now.
So describe a little bit for our non-technical listeners a little bit more how Git and GitHub work. You know, an open source repository of code that is version controlled. You guys can probably describe it better than I can.
Yeah, GitHub is just it's a website to host code repositories, and all that is it's a place where a developer, or I guess anyone who writes code, you don't even have to be a developer, can go create an account, and you can just start saving stuff to this repository. And people use them to build modules. People host entire sites there. We host our source code in Git, but we use private repositories. So it's the same sort of thing. All the code for your website exists in this repository, and GitHub just hosts it for you. It's free and it's public. So a lot of people use that to share things they're experimenting with or things they're working on, or something that I think most people are familiar with would be something like Twitter Bootstrap. Actually just called Bootstrap now. It's been distanced from Twitter. But it's a front-end CSS framework to quickly build out and scaffold the styles for a site. It exploded because it was originally built for Twitter. It was Twitter's styles. And then they took it, released it, and made it public. And people were like, oh my God, this is an entire kit for an entire site. We can do so much with this. And it just kept building and building and building, where now I think for a lot of people, Bootstrap is synonymous with quickly prototyping sites.
Yeah, I think the main benefit of Git, or you know, having a repository, is keeping a record of things that have changed and opening it up for more than one person to contribute to the code base. So that makes it really easy for teams to work together, even open it up to the public for people to submit, you know, their own modifications, and to have a record of all the things that change. So if something breaks, you know who to blame, and if you need to revert something back to how it was before, then you've got a record of that. So it makes it really easy to do.
And I think what you just hit on, Jeremy, is something that is a core realization of working within an agency, is the concept that the one web guy who built the site and will maintain the site that's not the way large sites can work, and it's not the way many sites work anymore. You have to be able to have that commented code that can be interpreted by somebody else. If you're ever going to build something that is sophisticated and just doesn't kill the one guy who built it, you have to have a team. And the best way to have that team is to have tools in place to be able to collaboratively work together specifically around code.
Yeah. And I think especially in an industry where deadlines are always tight, that, you know, projects come in and there's a tight deadline, and the only way to accomplish what you need to do is for more than one person to jump on it and work on it. And that becomes more and more true as, you know, we continue to we want to continue to innovate and do newer, cooler things, but our time frames haven't changed. So in order to do that, we have to, you know, make some adjustments. One guy can't do it all.
So talk about that a little bit, because I think that is something that, especially at this agency where we have our roots in live events, and it's so much of what we do, you know, the show must go on, tickets are on sale this day, the event is happening on television this day. That's one thing that's never going to, that ever since I've been here, it has never changed about our clients. The deadlines, you know, are what they are. You know, we're not building a site that can launch in 4 or 5 months. We have a site that needs to launch next month on Tuesday at 8 a.m. And so can you talk a little bit about how you have adapted, or how that kind of time frame and deadlines has impacted the way you work, both for the better or for the worse?
I think for the better, I've had to adjust the way that I think in a lot of ways to consider everything a candidate for reuse and recycling. So if there's a certain thing on a project that, you know, we could use this in another project, because this is going to be common across the board to a lot of our clients, then, hey, let's take the extra 20% of time on this particular component to make it flexible enough that we can plug it in future projects.
Right.
And so in doing so, yes, it costs you a little bit up front, but we can use it going forward, and that saves so much time as you go. And then with that time, you can do some of those innovations. You can learn some of those new technologies, because our clients are looking at what's out there right now, and they're saying, we want this stuff. We want our site to look like this. And, you know, a lot of times when you're in a series of tight deadlines, you have to do what you know to do. And there's not a ton of time to be learning new technologies and exploring different ideas. And so anytime we can save some time, just by good planning or thinking ahead, where we can do things more on purpose than by default, then I think we're going to stay ahead of the game. So,
and just to clarify, I think a perfect example that we've been talking a lot about is, you know, we do a lot of work for shows. Almost every show has a calendar that has a list of events. And you're not, when you say recycling, you're not talking they will look the same, not like right. Framework, but you're saying let's get the functionality in place, because let's not just reinvent a calendar every time a new show comes down the road. So how can we find those tools that we know, you know, and perfect that core, and then spend that other time where we might spend building it, really embellishing it and taking something to the next level?
Yeah. And the challenge there is, like, we might have six websites worked on by six different developers. They're all contractor freelancers. And so they'll do the same thing six different ways, and none of them are reusable because they built it specifically for that one installation.
Right.
And it wasn't built with, you know, global use in mind. And so the challenge there is doing the upfront work and saying, okay, we're going to make this component, and then actually delivering that to the people that we work with, and training them on how to implement it and that sort of thing. So it's definitely a different way of thinking and a different, you know, way of working. But I think in the long run, there are huge benefits.
Yeah, and I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head with that. Building things in such a way that they can be reused or recirculated. But as you said, Peter, a lot of our work we do with shows, and there are some things that we know every show is going to want, like a calendar. They're going to want probably an about the show page, like a cast and creative page, but none of them want a cookie cutter site. None of them want to look like the other site. So how do we build something in such a way where we only have to build this once and can reuse it multiple times, but have it be free enough that it can be changed to fit whatever design we have or whatever kind of theme the client has for the show? So, I mean, that's where we try to spend a lot of our time thinking about these things is how do we build and architect an application in such a way that we have a pool of reusable components that can be styled and potentially modified for each and every client, but are reusable enough that we don't break our backs spending 80 hours every time we want to build a calendar.
So to think about for a second, and Jeremy, you mentioned, you know, the concept of kind of creating the efficiencies and then making sure that freelancers or other development partners we work with kind of adhere to those. That, you know, in my experience has been a challenge, because sometimes when you are working as a developer, you find people that kind of just want to sit, you know, put their headphones on and dive into their work. And there's certainly an element to that in both of your jobs. But you also, I think one of the reasons we, you know, snatched you guys up and and really like working with you is because you do want to make things better, make things consistent, take that time to think about the bigger picture and the whole. How do you balance the two? How do you find the energy on those days where you just don't want to be interrupted and you just don't want to look at somebody else's code and tell them what they're doing wrong? Or, you know, just because that takes energy. It takes energy to teach or to usher someone into a different way of working. How do you find the strength and the energy?
Yeah, that's actually one of the biggest challenges in this in this position right now, is juggling those two sides. Like, you know, there's a zone that you have to get into, and you have to, you know, you have to teach people to respect the zone. You know, like, once you're in it, if it's broken, it's very difficult to get back in, even if it's just an email or a phone call. When you're developing, you know, you're building out architecture, you're carrying this whole scaffolding, this whole thing in your head, and working from this paradigm, and, you know, building towards the paradigm, and you know, you jump off and like help another developer with something, or you have a meeting, or you have, you know, this or that. It can make a day very unproductive on the code front. Like you might be productive within the context of the company or the group, but your own coding efforts can become easily compromised. So I think there's work to be done in figuring out not just like how do you protect that time, but maybe defining roles, and, you know, like, are we going to have some people that are just going to put the headphones on and just go to town, and then other people that do the you know, the phone calls and the training and the documentation and, you know, just the meetings and all of that stuff. So I think finding that balance and figuring out how to do that is a challenge anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, I've had 8-hour days where I got less than an hour of work done, and I've had some days where I'll sit down for an hour and everything that was on my schedule for that day is gone. Mm-hmm. So, it depends on, like Jeremy said, getting in that zone and being able to stay in that zone. I think something that a lot of people probably don't realize, with developers is, if my hands aren't on the keyboard or mouse, it doesn't mean I'm not working. It probably means I'm working harder than you think, because I am, like Jeremy said, we're juggling all this stuff in our head, trying to figure out the best way to build it, the best way to work. A lot of what we do is thinking. And then once you think about it, a lot of the code that we're writing is not the hard part. It's the coming up with the architecture and the solution. And then writing code at a certain point just kind of becomes second nature. I like to joke with people, sometimes my job is professional Googler, but other days my job could be professional thinker. I'm just sitting there thinking about the best way to solve this problem. And you could spend 4 to 8 hours thinking about something and then write it out in 20 minutes. But that if you didn't spend that 4 to 8 hours and you just started banging on the keyboard, you could be at that keyboard for weeks.
Well, and I think I would add another list to possible job titles, which is professional emergency responder.
Yeah.
You know, you back to the analogy of the plumber, you know, when the pipe starts leaking, you're the person that somebody shouts for. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, the client just noticed this. You have to drop everything you're doing. You have to come out of the zone.
Yeah.
And you have to be the guys to fix this. So it takes a real balance of the right temperament for people to I think do the job that you guys do. And so when you're looking for people to join the team, which we just went through recently, we just hired a new developer full time here at the agency. And so you guys just went through the process of meeting with some people, talking to them, getting a sense for whether or not you thought they would be a good fit. What are the things that you look for? What are some of the things that are, you know, key indicators that this might be somebody who'd be a good candidate to join the team?
Yeah, my biggest thing, I think, is looking for the ability to consider all the what-if scenarios and contingency planning and be able to think through the not just like this is what I do, but this is why I do it. This is why I make this choice when I write this code this certain way, and just to see that they're really thinking about all the ramifications of those decisions. What happens if, you know, if there's more content in this area than what you have in the mockup? What happens if, you know, you're in between two viewports on a, you know, that's not a standard screen size? You know, are you accounting for all of these scenarios that could happen? Or are you just building something based off of what you see rather than taking what you see and extrapolating it into a whole world and building out of, you know, out of that place.
Mm. So thinking about the long game, mm-hmm. not just what's going to enable me to cross this off my list.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, those kind of people are hard to find because, it's all about crossing off the list in some cases, you need the list crossers just to get something out. But I would rather have any day somebody who can think something through, ask the right questions, and build something that will really hold up.
And I think like any occupation where you're building something, you want to find somebody who's going to take pride in that.
Yeah.
You want to find somebody who's eager to attach their name to it and said, you know what, I did that. I was part of a team, don't get me wrong, and I may not have designed it, but you know what? It works, and I'm signing my name to that, and I know it's going to keep working because I spent the time to do it.
Yeah.
Adam, what about you? What do you look for when you're interviewing someone?
It's a lot of the same. I look for not so much what you did, but why you did. Was there intent behind the choices that you made, or did you just do what you were taught to do? We had a couple of situations where we would ask questions like, oh, well, why did you do this way? Not that it was wrong or right, because it's very hard to do something wrong on the web. There's 100 ways to do something correct. They're all just different. And some of the answers that we would get back were like, oh, well, I don't know. That's just how I've always done it. Mm-hmm. And on some things, that's totally fine. There's a lot of stuff that I do that I just do because it's how I've always done it.
But even still, if you go back and think about like when you originally decided to do that,
yeah, there was a reason.
There was a reason behind it. And at that point you said, you know what, I'm going to always do it this way because of this. And over time that might grow a little foggy and you have to think back, why do I do it this way? But you should always be able to come up with
it changes too. Like there's stuff where
technology's changed.
Best practice 5 years ago is not what it is today.
Best practice 5 minutes ago is not always what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so a lot of what I look for when we interview is the thought behind why you did what you did. And then I don't think this is something Jeremy touched on, but I know it's something we both look for and we think about, is willingness to learn and learn new technology. Because like we just said with best practice 5 minutes ago, the web is constantly changing. People are always coming up with something new. Everything is always changing. We get a new browser now from Chrome or Firefox. Firefox has nightlies. Chrome has nightly betas with Canary. Internet Explorer and Safari are still a little slow, but they're catching up. But it's like things are constantly changing. You can't rely on the same stuff you knew even a month ago now. So constantly learning, seeking that knowledge. I think that's almost more important to me than the level of skill that you have. Because if you're willing to learn, you will learn. And if you're maybe not super strong in one area, but you're willing to learn and you read about that area, we're willing to teach and you can get your strength in that area and then you'll continue to grow. Where if we interview someone who's really amazing at something, but they just don't care, I think I might pass on that person just because what happens a month from now when that thing is no longer useful and then they don't want to learn something else.
you can be a real expert in one language or technology, but the expiration dates, I hear what you're saying, are shorter and shorter than they've ever been.
Yeah.
So it's really about, you know, how do you keep yourself interested and curious about the things that are impacting the product that you make? I want to put you guys on the spot. So if you could give some advice to somebody who is a web developer or thinking about becoming a web developer, name two technology related things that you think they should be studying now, and one completely random area of study that you think would benefit them in this field. And it could be the violin, learning the violin because, you know, it teaches you dexterity, whatever you think that could be. Two tech related things and one non-tech related thing that you think would benefit someone who wants to be a web developer.
Well, if you follow tech blogs and Hacker News, the things you should be learning right now, right this minute, are React, Facebook's front-end framework. They're doing a lot of really cool stuff. They built React initially for the web and then completely ported the framework and rebuilt it for native and released a new framework called React Native for building native mobile apps. So you only have to know the one language. And that there's a lot of stuff like that. People are doing really cool stuff. I don't know if I can suggest any like tools in particular, but just keeping your ear to the ground and watching what people are doing. I would actually suggest not getting tied to any particular framework, because a new framework is born every week and a new framework dies every week. There's the big three, well, four now, which are Angular, Ember, Backbone, and now React. But there's a bunch of other frameworks that people use. I mean, jQuery has been around forever. It's technically the same thing. People have just found better ways to do it, and now we have these other frameworks. And if there was something random, I kind of see inspiration in like everything. Like something I'm really interested in is like building architecture. Does it relate to software architecture? I mean, not really. But the thought process behind building something is the same. And like, you have to, one of the things that I find really interesting is you don't go to an architect and ask them to defy physics when building a building. It's kind of the same idea with building a website. There's the web has inherent limitations, and you want to find people who have those limitations and know where you can bend those limitations and maybe ignore some of them. That's how you get really awesome Frank Lloyd Wright buildings and big cantilevered structures. You can do the same thing on the web. You just have to know how to do it. So, I mean, anything you're interested in, you can tie back to what you're doing.
That's great. And I think, you know, what I would extrapolate from your random answer is a respect for the fundamentals of what you're working in, and making yourself learn, you know, exactly what are those things that are going to defy gravity. And also implicit in what you said is the ability to really collaborate with being part of a team. An architect doesn't put up a builder by himself.
Oh, yeah.
There's an architect, there's a builder, there's the contractor, there's the interior decorators. And the end result is a relationship between all of those things. Jeremy, what about you? What are the techie, geeky things that you think prospective developers should be looking at right now? And what's the random thing?
Yeah, I would say definitely keeping up with the new technologies and seeing what's coming out. But at the same time, looking to, you know, gain familiarity and learn more about some of the principles, software engineering principles that have been around for, you know, decades. Like learn those design patterns, you know, the dependency injection, the MVC frameworks. All that stuff isn't going anywhere soon, and the principles will serve you better than learning a particular framework or you know, style or whatever. So if you understand the principles, you can see where a lot of these new technologies are coming from, how they work under the hood, and it'll give you a better foundation for moving forward. And that's what I would say, I think, are the biggest things. I try to read books and do tutorials and stay, you know, when I have time to stay up to date and increase my depth of knowledge. and quality of knowledge of these kind of things. As far as outside of tech, it's funny you said violin because I grew up studying classical violin from when I was a kid. You know, I was doing music competitions my whole life, and I thought that's what I was going to do when I grew up. And you know, life takes different turns, and I'm glad I'm doing what I'm doing. I think it taps a lot more of kind of my design, I guess, than maybe just, you know, playing music or doing one particular thing. There's creative elements, there's technical elements, there's, you know, relational elements. It's all, you know, so it's kind of cool. But I think something about learning an instrument at a young age, it changes the way your brain is wired. Actually, it increases your spatial reasoning, your ability to grasp large concepts and process them and synthesize them into something usable. And so I think musicians make the greatest developers because they have a natural propensity to synthesize new information when new information is coming in all the time, synthesize it into a daily workflow and turn that into a product. And that's difficult to do. But not everybody can go back to when they were 4 years old and become a musician, but hey, learn to read music, pick up the guitar, you know, do something if you want, something like that. The other thing I would say, other completely unrelated, is get out of the house, find something that takes you away from your desk. I started kayaking with my kids this summer, and we go out and get on the river, and it's just like it just changes your soul. And you can draw something from that can sustain you through the times of where you're chained to your desk and trying to solve these difficult problems, just to have something completely different. So.
Well, there's absolutely nothing that I can say that's going to top that answer. So thank you guys both so much for sitting down and chatting. We love you guys. We're so glad that you're working at the agency. I think we have an amazing, strong team in place, and I can't wait to see where we go. We'd love to get your feedback. If you want to send us an email at podcast@situation.nyc, if you want to learn more about being a developer, if you're interested in hearing or asking more questions from Jeremy or Adam, send them to us. We'll get them answered on the podcast. And guys, thanks again so much. We really appreciate your time, and you know, now get back to work.
Thanks, Peter.
Sounds good.
Thanks, guys.